was asking about the differences between different kinds of Buddhism in different countries.
So I think that we better understand what Buddhism is from the very beginning. What about reality, the truth of whatever appears? We don't have to call it anything at all. The understanding, the truth of whatever appears, no matter what you call it, no matter it is Mahayana, Hinayana, Christian, or whatever. Yeah. Just about whatever appears, especially now, can there be the understanding of whatever appears right now? Can there be any understanding of it, just one at a time, whatever appears right now? And
I actually don't understand the question exactly.
Can it be understood, what appears now, as it is, not just like we think before? For example, there is seeing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is it true?
Guess so.
Can we have more understanding about it? Because it's real. How come to be this moment of seeing? There must be conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, nothing can arise at all. Or it will arise at random if there is no proper conditions for its arising. So seeing is not hearing. So what is seeing and what is hearing, both are real, but they are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the nature of that which sees? The true nature of that, not I, not anyone, it's only seeing, right? Seeing is seeing. It cannot be other thing at all. It cannot be other thing else at all. It cannot be hearing, it cannot be thinking, it cannot be me or mine or anybody, because it's conditioned to arise just to see and then gone completely, never to return at all. No matter when, this life or other lives, that which has gone cannot arise again, because it's completely gone.
Mm-hmm.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Can that be me or I? The seeing, can it be I see? Or my seeing? Because it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. Is this true? By your own thought, thinking, considering.
Mm-hmm.
Not from the other's words at all.
Yeah.
But seeing now arises. Because it sees from nothing, then there's seeing, and then nothing again. Each moment is like this.
Mm-hmm.
But the succession from moment to moment so very rapidly, that's why no one can experience directly the moment when it arises and it falls away.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as it has fallen away, it conditions the next moment.
Mm-hmm.
Very rapidly. From birth, the moment of birth, on and on and on, from moment to moment up until now,
mm-hmm.
and until it's death, completely gone. Or not death yet, only from falling asleep and then wake up. Everything is then and then gone at moment of being fast asleep. So what's the use of today when there is moment of falling asleep again, all gone completely? Who you are while you are asleep? No one there, no idea, no thought, nothing appears.
What I am I when I'm asleep?
Yeah, completely fast asleep,
in a deep sleep.
No one there at all. No world.
No, just the sleeping creature.
Yeah.
No idea of anyone, right? When you're fast asleep, in a deep sleep.
Mm. Yeah, that's... no. Yeah.
No idea of who you are.
When I'm sleeping?
Yes, when you're in a deep sleep.
Yeah, because I can't think.
Right.
Yes.
Well.
Okay, I can't. I don't know that I'm sleeping. How is that?
Is the eye while one is fast asleep?
Oh, there's no one there sleeping.
Nothing appear, but it's not death yet. So that moment is different from seeing. But there must be to sleeping for sure.
Mm-hmm.
At that moment, it's conditioned to be fast asleep, deep sleep, by conditions, but not forever. There must be moment of seeing again, hearing again, and then sleep again. And this is life until death.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the worth, the best of all in one's life?
Excuse me, the best?
The best thing in one's life. What is the best thing?
What's the most worthwhile in life? Best in life?
What's best in life? I don't know. I can't say what would be best in life.
Just live, or better understanding, to understand whatever appears, rather than not understanding anything at all. The truth of whatever appears is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not known until we can hear the right word which talk about it, about everything now. What would you like to know now? Nothing.
I don't have a specific question, actually.
Yeah.
Another question, a way of asking it. What can be known now? What can be known now?
Would you like to know or not?
Of course I would like to know, but what can be known now? By whom? That's my question.
What can be known by understanding now?
Understanding the now.
So what is the now?
The now, I mean, at the same time, I think it cannot exist, right? Because this time is moving, or it's basically anything happens.
Right, earlier Ajahn mentioned seeing,
yeah.
Right? So is there seeing now?
Well, as I said, once I see it, it's already moved on, so it's like you can never reach the now.
But there are some things appearing now.
It was already gone.
It's not known directly yet.
Yeah.
It's not known directly yet. But there can be that level of understanding. From hearing, considering, and right understanding develops from time to time.
I mean, in other words, what you just said is true. I mean, the now is already fallen away, but this is just an intellectual understanding. And what Ajahn is suggesting is that not just intellectual understanding, there can be deeper levels of understanding to know it directly.
The point being stressed is, as you say, each moment of seeing, each moment of hearing has gone instantly, so fast, so quite unknown, usually just no understanding at all. But the point of considering how there are just different moments of seeing and hearing and thinking and deep sleep arising and falling away all the time is to understand how actually it's not Daniel's seeing or my or Daniel's hearing or my understanding or my sleeping. There are just these different moments of experiencing, arising and falling away. If the seeing is Daniel's, what about the hearing? What about the deep sleep? Actually, they're just impermanent moments of consciousness arising and falling away. And as the Buddha taught us, because each of them has gone immediately, like you said, each one is actually unsatisfactory, not worth pursuing, because otherwise we're just pursuing and clinging on to that which has gone immediately. So this is the truth of dukkha that the Buddha taught, that each of these realities arises by conditions, falls away instantly, and is inherently unsatisfactory, not worth clinging to. And there is no one there, no one who experiences at all. So the reason it seems that there's an idea of I or Daniel is because there is no understanding of these impermanent realities. It seems it's a cup or a table, and it seems that it lasts. But actually, at a moment of touching, it's just a hardness that's experienced and then gone. And it's the thinking that gives the illusion that there is a cup, a table, a person. But as Jan said, where is the Daniel in deep sleep? Or at a moment of seeing, where is Daniel? Actually, it's just an idea in our minds. So Buddhism is about different realities, different dharmas that arise by conditions and don't belong to anyone, are not self, no I to be found. And this is why it's such a deep teaching.
So anywhere, Japan, here, China, Taiwan, if there's a teaching that points to this, what we've just been talking about, then it's the Buddha's teachings.
If it's not, then it's not. They could call themselves Buddhist, you can label them Buddhism, but if it's not a teaching about realities of our life, then it's not what the Buddha taught.
We are here to listen or hear about the true words, to understand life, that's all. No matter it's called Mahayana, Hinayana, Buddhism, or what, just to understand life as it is, to learn more, to understand more what life is.
So, how do you, what is life then, in that sense?
What is life? If there is only the reality which arises but cannot experience, cannot know anything, is it life? Is this life hardness? See, so what is life? Everyone talk about life, but what is it? Is there life now? This is the way to understand life. Is there life now? Very difficult question.
Well, there is life because we're here, this seeing, this hearing.
So life is?
Just life, to me, life is, from what I've learned, life is just a moment. And that brings me to a question. I've heard you say a few times, moments arise once in samsara and gone again, never to return. I've thought about it a lot, but I'm wondering, why do you say that?
Because it's true.
It's true, but is it to remind us that
actually
it's just impermanent, or?
Actually, there's nothing. If there's no condition to condition anything to arise, there is nothing.
If there's no condition for anything to arise, there's nothing. Mm. Yes.
Yes.
And like the seeing now, there are conditions for seeing at this moment, but this seeing, which is now gone, will never ever arise again. That's it. Completely gone, never to reappear again, because the seeing now is different, experiencing a different visible object. So it's to indicate that what arises by conditions is gone and will never occur again. So everything is gone instantly. So what's the use of clinging to that seeing that's right. gone immediately and will never reappear?
I think when I first heard it, it was like, oh, wow. And then I hear it again, and I wouldn't say it doesn't mean anything for me, but I could, because I think I theoretically understand it. Yes, it's gone, but when I first heard it had an impact, now it's... doesn't kind of mean anything.
Because it's not enough just to hear about it once. Not enough. Mm. But the truth is the truth forever. You cannot change the truth.
Mm. Samsara is the cycle of birth and death. So this life, there are these different moments of consciousness throughout life, and at the end of this life, next life, next life, next life. So this is samsara, life after life after life. So each reality which arises now by conditions will never arise again. And life continues on like this again and again because of ignorance and attachment. And only life in samsara only finishes when all defilements have been eradicated, when that being has become fully enlightened. And then, like in the case of the Buddha or the great disciples, his great disciples, no birth again. So if someone says the Buddha is still alive or worships the Buddha, this is completely wrong understanding, because no more life for the fully enlightened one.
We were asking, what is life? One indicator of life is what we call sentience, the ability to experience. So we talk about sentient beings as opposed to inanimate objects. So the ability to experience is synonymous with life. So now there is experiencing of different kinds. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. All of these are kinds of consciousness that experience an object.
Because it's just the senses you're describing.
I'm describing the senses, yes. Exactly. What else is there apart from the five senses and thinking at the moment? Everything that we can mention can be encompassed within one or other of those experiences. Everything that's of the present moment, as far as your experiencing is concerned right now, and anyone's experiencing is concerned, it has to fall within one of those worlds of experiencing. Would that be correct?
Worlds of experiencing? What do you mean?
Well, if you take the world of seeing
yes.
as being one world, yes. the experiencing of what is visible as being one form of experiencing, and the experiencing of what is audible as being another form of experiencing, and so on with the other five senses, and then the mind, which can be thinking of things that are not being experienced through any of the five sense doors. The question is, at the present moment, is it anything other than one or other of those kinds of experiencing, or their objects?
I don't understand your question exactly. Sorry.
Is life now
yeah.
anything other than one or other of those different kinds of experiencing?
Well, basically you say that life is to actually, well... that something is living, or maybe, or life is if you can experience something like through the senses, right? Is that correct?
And
the mind, yeah. But if you, for example, our my glass of water here, that one cannot experience life.
That's right. See, what we generally call, yeah. I mean, before hearing a Dhamma, if you ask any person if they talk about life, they would generally be referring to a being which experiences. And if you come down to it, it's just actually moments of experience. Like your life, my life. We're thinking in terms of a whole set of different experiences throughout from our past, and we project into the future and now. But what it comes down to, and what John was trying to point out, is that when it comes down to it, it's just all those consist of just one moment of experience through one of the five senses in the mind at a time. There cannot be two moments of experience at the same time, right? You can't see and you can't hear at the same time, right? It can appear that way, but in reality, it's only one. But because it rises and falls away very fast, and there's a thinking in between, that gives there's the idea of a whole, of me sitting here talking and listening. But from what we hear, the Buddha, that's why we, without the Buddha, we wouldn't know about these things, is that when we hear the teachings, we are told that in actual fact, what we used to take as so many things happening together at one time, or and there's a self sitting here doing things, is actually one moment of experience through the five sense door at a time. So we used to take all that together and call a being living, or refer to life as being the experience, somebody who experiences this. So when it comes down to, it's just one moment of experience that conditions ideas such as this, hearing, seeing, thinking, right? So in the end, life is, in reality, just one moment of experience. Do you agree with that?
When we talk about life and we have Dhamma discussion, like my friend, when they heard about life in Buddhist, they think about life is science, because in science, plants have lives. So, what difference between life in science and life in Buddhist?
Well, that also, it's usually after hearing the teachings that we come to understand that plants are essentially no different from glass, in the sense that the rupas, the materiality, is all conditioned by heat, right? Without the Buddha's teachings, then we have the wrong impression. We see a plant from a seed growing up to this. We think there's more than that, because a plant is definitely different from the glass. So from our observation, we project the idea of life into plants as well. But with understanding, as Daniel just now seemed to get some idea about, he says there's no life here. So after hearing the Dhamma, he could consider and understand that even plants essentially is no different from this. So in the end, what life really is nama. That and of course there's jivitindriya rupa, but then again it's without nama there's no such rupas.
Shall we talk just about one word at a time? Just one word at a time. Like sense, what is sense? Five senses. What is that? Yeah, we talk about sense all the time,
yeah.
But what is it?
What's an example?
A sense lets me experience things like the seeing, hearing.
Yes.
That's the sense is how it's described by the book. But I don't know how you would describe a sense then.
Just one word at a time. There is sense, right?
Yes.
Like, 5 senses or more?
Well, that's in the literature, people believe there are 5 senses, then you could maybe add a. But it's also, I mean, our senses are limited to what we can see. We can only see, for example, in.
Yes, but when we talk about the truth of sense,
yep.
It's true, it's real, it's a reality. What is this? 5 or 6 or more?
That I don't know. Maybe there are more that I don't have. But I. The one that I know at least is the touching,
yeah,
the
taste. Is only and thinking about it, but not understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that from birth up to now, if one does hear the word of the teachings of the Buddha, no understanding of anything at all. We just talk without understanding the truth of it. For example, sense, 5 sense and mind. See, so what is the difference between the sense and the mind? Otherwise, we cannot understand this moment at all.
Well, for me, the mind, yeah. The mind is the processor of the sense. So basically, the mind.
So what is thinking? It is sense or mind? Thinking.
The thinking is mind. Right?
The thinking is mind.
Yeah.
And what about seeing?
Seeing is seeing, but then my mind. Maybe.
Not mind yet, only seeing itself.
Well, seeing is a sense, isn't that it?
Can we say that no matter it's seeing or thinking, it's the reality which can experience an object, different doorways? There must be a reality which can experience, otherwise the world does not appear. No world when there's no one experiencing it, or when there's no experiencing, experience it. Right? So, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking are different moments of that which experiences different objects through different doorways. So, the reality which can experience now arises, and when it sees, we call it seeing, that which sees, right? No one there. Can the eye see?
Yes.
The eye.
The eye.
Yeah. Can it see?
The eye itself, with my whole body, it can.
No, just the eye, just one thing.
Can it see nothing?
Can it see?
It can't see.
It cannot see. So it's not the seeing. The eye, it's not the seeing. Two different realities, right? If they do not arise, there wouldn't be seeing or eye at all. So, when it arises, can you make it arise?
No.
Can no one? Can anyone make it arise?
No.
But there must be conditions for its arising.
Yes.
To be the eye or the seeing differently. They are all absolute realities.
But if there are these conditions, right? So they must be all given already at a certain, like, because. There's a condition happening now, and then there's next moment coming. So these conditions, are they already all in place, or how is that?
That's why we have to understand what condition is.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we just talk about condition.
Yeah.
What condition the eye, and what condition the seeing. Different realities, different conditions. So no one can do anything at all, because actually, if seeing does not arise at all, there can not be anyone who sees. But when seeing arises, it's I who sees. Right? That is right or wrong. I see, or seeing sees. What's right?
It's not I. Yeah.
What's right and what's wrong? Mm-hmm.
The question is, when there is seeing.
Yeah. The question is, when there is seeing, is it seeing consciousness that sees, or is it I that sees? I, me.
Yeah.
I, me.
Because
a minute ago we said that it's not the I, the physical I, that sees. It's the consciousness that is associated with the physical I that experiences the visible, right? It may be less confusing to talk about the ear. Does the ear, the physical ear, hear? Or is it consciousness that hears?
Brings me back to your point that your friend said, you know, like if it's, there's always a scientific way of looking at things, and you say in this sense, yeah, it's probably the conscious that's here, because a physical ear probably doesn't hear by itself if it's just an ear. But when you look at it from a scientific way, there's probably like some wavelengths coming into your ear and move, right. And then it creates a sound
the
in your mind.
The ear is necessary for hearing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually experience.
No, it doesn't experience. It's just actually a machine, you could say.
A receptor.
A receptor, yeah.
Okay. So then Ajahn's question is, when there is hearing, is it that hearing consciousness that hears, or is it I who hears?
It's the conscious that hears it, I think, yeah.
So the whole point, and it's whether one's interested in science or not, it's exactly the same. There are two kinds of realities. There are those realities that can experience an object. So seeing consciousness can see an object. Hearing consciousness hears an object. Thinking thinks about something. So these are the first kind of reality which can experience an object. And then there are those realities, such as ear sense or eye sense or hardness. They're real. Hardness is real. It can be touched, but it cannot experience anything. So the first kind of realities can experience. Second kind of realities cannot experience anything. And by understanding more that this is life at this moment, though it just consists of those realities that experience and those realities that don't experience anything. And understanding more about these two kinds of realities is the way to be clear that actually there is no one who can do anything, no one who can experience, because it's seeing itself which sees, it's hearing itself which hears, it's thinking itself which thinks, and the ear sense or the eye sense or the hardness cannot experience, cannot know anything at all. And it doesn't matter how long one may study science or how much of an expert one might be, it will never lead to the understanding of the truth of life at this moment. So, and the truth of life is exactly the same no matter one's a scientist or a farmer or with this interest or that hobby. This seeing now which sees and hearing which hears. And so the condition for hearing has to be that there must be sound which has impinged on the ear sense. So there must be sound to be heard and there must be ear sense. Otherwise there couldn't be hearing. So sound and ear sense are conditions for hearing to arise. So many, many different conditions for each reality. And this is what Buddhism is. It's just the description of life at this moment for the purpose of understanding it and eradicating the idea of self, so that it's clear that there really are just these different realities arising by their particular conditions. And as Sukhin said, life just exists at this moment, just one moment of experiencing arising by conditions gone completely.
So Daniel, does the body touch? Does the hand touch?
It's the same question as the whether the ear hears. I mean, it doesn't hear, so the body doesn't touch, and
the body doesn't experience the hardness or softness or heat or cold that is felt. It's consciousness that does that.
But there is in anything that's living, there must be a conscious. Am I wrong now?
The meaning of life was the question. So we equated life with sentience, that is the ability to experience. Plants, for example, although they grow, they are not able to experience see, hear, smell, taste or touch. They react to temperature and other conditions, but they do not themselves experience anything. So that's the indicator of life.
So those realities, the first kind that experience an object, are called namas, N-A-M-A, namas. And those realities that cannot experience anything like hardness or ear sense are rupas. So if we're talking about a plant, there are just different rupas. There are no namas. And the rupas in this case are just conditioned by temperature, but not by karma. Ear sense, eye sense, these realities in a what we call a living being in life are conditioned by past karma. So it's one condition, but the plant, the rupas of the plant are not conditioned by past karma, and they're not conditioned by consciousness, which also conditions rupas.
Kunsara, so life is each moment of reality which arises and falls away. So life is dukkha. So what the main cause of dukkha?
Life.
The main condition for dukkha is ignorance. Ignorance and attachment. Because of ignorance and attachment, that is the reason that life continues on in samsara. If ignorance and attachment have been completely eradicated, no more life, no more dukkha. So the ones who were enlightened, they understood that each reality that is conditioned now, that makes up life, is actually inherently unsatisfactory, not worth clinging to at all. So through the understanding of the unsatisfactoriness of life, the understanding leads to the eradication of clinging and ignorance.
Earlier we were talking about samsara, and so what Sarah is talking now about is that really, but she's trying to say that, and Kunmetha asked about the cause of all this. So we're here, we're living, we were born, we will die, and we'll be reborn over and over again. That's because we still have the seeds of ignorance and craving. And earlier she was mentioned the arahat who has eradicated all ignorance and craving. So when it's after his last moment in that life, there are no conditions for rebirth. So no, because no more ignorance and craving to condition more rebirth. Right now, and his life before death was conditioned by past ignorance and craving, right? And ours too is being conditioned by past ignorance and craving and more fuel for further existence and rebirth.
So the Buddha taught about the perversions, the vipalasa, the perversions of thinking. So what we normally think of as being pleasant or satisfactory is actually unsatisfactory, is actually dukkha. What we take for being permanent or lasting is actually impermanent. What we take for self or something is actually not self, not anything. And what we take for being beautiful is actually foul. So the development of understanding is the waking up to understanding what life really is at this moment. So life carries on as normal, but with more understanding.
I mean, you can't do anything about it, right?
I mean, the ignorance and craving is so much accumulated that it's going to drive on and on. And so long as there's the fuel, there will be continuation of the life. And what arises when, as earlier you were talking about, everything comes together. So they come together, then only it arises. Seeing arises only when there's contact of visible object with the eye, right? So everything just happens like that, by conditions. They fall by conditions, in no one's control. There's no self, but just these conditions rising and falling away.
But how can you be actually reborn and die and reborn and die if you don't exist somehow?
Like now,
there's no I who exists. There's no I who is dying and now seeing, now hearing, now thinking. It's just different realities arising by conditions. So same, at the end of this life, what we take for this life, there's a particular a consciousness called the death consciousness, which falls away. And like now, after seeing has fallen away, it's followed by another citta, because there is conditions for continuation. So with that, after death, because there is not all defilements have been eradicated, we're not arahats, there will be a continuation, like now.
So just like there is no person, no being, no Daniel, no Sarah now in reality, so at the end of this life, there's no person, no being who is reborn or who is reincarnated. Just like now, just moments of consciousness, different mental factors and different physical phenomena arising and falling away.
But then it's actually wrong to talk about that you get reborn, because
it's not a question of a person being reborn as someone else. It's just a question of the consciousness, which has its conditions in the past, as we said. There are still conditions for that consciousness to arise. Moment after moment in a stream, nothing can stop that. So then moment of death followed by first moment of life in another realm, and there'll be another identity in that realm, but that is just a transitory identity, just as this identity is transitory for this lifetime only.
But we do use the word rebirth.
Rebirth,
yeah. We use the word rebirth to refer to a particular kind of consciousness, the first moment of life.
But actually, in the deepest sense,
there is rebirth at each moment. There's birth and death at each moment. The seeing now is not the thinking a moment ago. The hearing now is not the seeing at that moment. The pleasant feeling now is not the unpleasant feeling a moment ago. So in this sense, we can talk about birth and death at each moment, and at the end of this life, just like now, different moments of consciousness arising by different conditions. So if there is understanding now what birth and death is now, and about how different realities arise by conditions, then it's clear that that's how it is at the end of life too.
So you said that basically there's like a consciousness that is moving on through time, and if this consciousness would actually understand that it shouldn't be ignore everything, if it would basically get enlightened, it would stop. Was that right?
Well, consciousness doesn't move on, but it continues to arise and fall, right? Momentary. The conditions for that are all in the past. The accumulation of ignorance and wrong view conditions unwholesome deeds to be performed, and there's wanting to be reborn also. And these all are factors that ensure that a moment of death at the end of one lifetime is followed by the first moment of another lifetime.
So if there is no I or whatever, but what is it that is experienced and gets like well, has to endure all these conditions and this, like, through time.
It's just different moments of consciousness. And the accumulated tendencies, the likes and dislikes, are passed on, and the deeds, good and bad, that are going to condition results, the force of that is carried forward from one moment of consciousness to the next.
Yes, but something is experiencing it.
Experiencing what?
Something is experiences like all
the results of,
yeah, results, yes, of it.
Like, so, the present moment, right?
So, yes.
Consciousness, so something is experiencing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seeing consciousness experiences the visible.
Yep.
Hearing consciousness experiences the audible. And thinking thinks about those things that have been experienced. And memory, past memory, memories are accumulated and carried forward. So we understand the language that's being spoken, don't have to stop and think about the meaning of the words. It's all there.
But now you said we, like, we, yes, understand. So,
right.
So the thing is, or you say that...
Because each stream, yeah, of consciousness, yeah, is unique. So the stream of consciousness that we think of as Jonathan...
Yeah.
Is quite separate from the stream that we identify as Daniel.
Okay.
The moments of consciousness in each stream are related to each other and to all the past moments. But that's all. They never cross over, right?
Even if there is understanding that actually it's just seeing which sees or hearing that hears, it doesn't mean we don't refer to, oh, we can see this or we can hear this. Life carries on as normal, so we still use ordinary language. We still carry on with our worldly affairs. But whilst carrying on with the worldly affairs or using conventional ordinary language, the understanding can develop that actually, in truth, life just consists of these different namas, different realities which experience, and the rupas, the different realities which cannot experience anything. And that's all life is. So this is what Buddhism is actually about. It's just about the understanding of these different realities that make up life. And the reason it's so different from any other teaching is because it's about reality, which is not self at all. So it's not a matter of following any rituals or following any special practices. It's just about understanding now, no matter how one's life goes.
But to get back to the beginning of our discussion, and Ajahn mentioned understanding, and we asked what can be understood now. What we've been discussing is the way things are explained, but it's not any kind of understanding of what is real at the present moment. So maybe Ajahn could speak a bit more about that.
Yeah, as you'd like to study or learn to understand just one word at a time in order to understand clearly. Because we heard many words like suffering, dukkha, and so on. But what about the understanding of each word? For example, ignorance. Is it real? Is that ignorance? Just about now, see, ignorance. Is that ignorance?
In the beginning, I mean, with intellectual understanding, the best we can say is that there must be ignorance.
Okay, what is it? We continue on little by little, gradually, in order to really understand the nature of each.
It's a mental reality.
Why do you call it mental?
Because it refers to a mental activity.
We can talk about many words. It's real. And when it is ignorance, it means that it cannot understand at all. Whenever it arises, it cannot understand anything. So ignorance is real, but what kind of reality is it? Because now we talk about two different kinds, that which arises but cannot experience anything at all, and that which arises and experience whenever it arises, it experiences. No matter what is it, but it experiences. So when we talk about ignorance, is it real? Is it a reality? Is it there now? In order to understand the truth of everything in life, we have to understand this moment. Is there ignorance? If we say yes, there is, we have to know what kind or what type of reality is it.
Like Al Daniel, if there is no understanding, if there's confusion, for example, if it's not clear what life is at this moment because there's no understanding, is there ignorance?
I don't think it's not necessarily ignorance if you don't understand. It's just you don't know. I mean, this for me, ignorance is you don't want to understand.
We have to understand what is ignorance.
Yeah.
Is it real?
There's nothing real. I mean, ignorance is a state of mind.
So you mean that it's a reality which is a state of mind, right? There must be the mind, the reality which experiences the faculty of experiencing. Shall we use just one word, more word? Citta. Mm-hmm. Citta. You might have heard before people just talk about citta, but when we ask what is citta, they cannot tell us what is it. Mm-hmm. So citta is that reality which is conditioned to arise just to experience, that's all. It means that whenever it arises, it experiences. Like now, seeing is that which knows what is seen. It has to be that which is seen only. And the seeing sees it. Right? The eye cannot see. That which is seen cannot see. But there must be a reality which is now arises and see. Just to see, that's all. Seeing cannot think. Seeing does not lie. Seeing just arises to see. And that is called citta, the faculty, the leader of experiencing. So from the word the leader of experiencing, of experiences, it means that there must be other reality which can experience, but it's not that which is the chief of experience. So there are many realities which arises and many realities arise and experience. They are different. Like seeing, it's not hearing. It arises to experience, but the object is different by conditions, because the sound cannot impinge on the eye, and the visible object cannot impinge on the ear. So who can make it different from this? That's why there is another word, anatta. No self, no one. Not under anyone's control at all. It's conditioned to arise just to be that particular one and falls away instantly. So where is the permanent I or the impermanent? Because if there is nothing at all, there is no idea whether this is this and that is that. But when something arises, it's there. There is thinking after seeing all the time. And there must be memory. Otherwise, we cannot remember anything at all which is experienced. So, is memory a reality? Is it real now? You know what's what? The seeing cannot remember anything. It just sees. But there must be another reality which remembers, marks the object which is experienced. So there can be the idea of something or whatever it is. And that is not citta, another new word, cetasika. The mental factor, they arise together. So when one is asked what condition citta to arise, cetasikas, by way of arising together, it conditions each one in a moment So why do we have to understand this in order to know the truth of this moment as it is? There is no one, no self at all, but there are different realities arising and falling by conditions. Is it true?
So we mentioned before about different kinds of consciousness, how at each moment of life there is a moment of consciousness. For an instant, seeing is one kind of consciousness, hearing is one kind of consciousness. So these are what Ajahn is describing as citta, the leaders in experience. So seeing is citta, hearing is citta, any moment of consciousness is citta. But citta cannot experience the object on its own. It has to arise with different mental factors. There has to be memory at each moment, marking and remembering what is experienced. Otherwise, there couldn't be an idea of a cup of water if there was no memory. And so memory is one mental factor, one chetasika that arises with each citta. And another chetasika that arises often in a day is ignorance. So when we hesitate and we're not sure, there is ignorance now. But any moment when there is not knowing what is true, not knowing what is real, any moment when there isn't kindness or generosity or understanding or other good qualities, actually ignorance is there most of the day. So just not knowing, just not having any idea about what life is at this moment, actually it's ignorance there, the opposite of understanding. So the development of understanding is the gradual removal of ignorance. And the more understanding is developed, the more it knows how much more ignorance there is than we could possibly imagine. So after seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, almost always there is ignorance, just not knowing anything. So most of the day we carry up, most of the time we carry through on through life in blindness, not knowing, not understanding it.
So Ajahn, nobody can know what ignorance is without hearing the Dhamma.
So the question is there anyone in this room or here? Is there anyone?
Well, I could say here. Is there anyone or the different consciousness experiencing something altogether?
Without absolute realities, there wouldn't be anything at all.
Yeah.
So what we take for things and people and I are different realities arising and falling away in split seconds, all the time, unknowingly, until we learn to understand the moment when it arises and falls away, then there can be less and less clinging to that as I, as before. Otherwise, there's nowhere. And we can see the difference between ignorance and right understanding. Before hearing, there's no understanding of anything at all. But after hearing, it's the food for thought, thinking about what is heard, whether it's true or not. In order to have right understanding of reality which is heard more and more and more, just to know that there is actually, there's no one, only when there are conditions, there are many things arise all the time, so it appears as the whole world. But from one condition, a reality to arise. And at this moment, there are more than one conditions for even seeing to arise. Only the eye base or the eye rupa, that which cannot experience, without that which can impinge on it, that cannot be seen. The blind cannot see.
So in truth, is there any we to have the same experience?
Most likely not.
No, we. So is there any shared experience in reality?
Well, you cannot share the experience because everyone has a different...
Different moments of seeing, different moments of hearing, yeah. Different moments of thinking. Like now, who knows what each one is thinking or what the thinking is thinking about at each moment. So each reality, each moment is conditioned in different ways. So actually, it's the path of learning to live alone. So living alone with seeing, living alone with hearing, living alone with thinking. So when there's right understanding, it's clear that from birth to death, Chitta lives alone. No shared experience at all.
And when time comes, it's death. Not this body or this personality anymore at all. But there are conditions to condition rebirth moment again and again. This is the circle of birth and death. No one can stop reality to arise. No one can make it arise. For example, can you stop consciousness to arise now? The previous one is gone. No one can stop the arising of the next one at all, from moment to moment.
Will the next one never remember the old one?
There is a reality which arises and performs the function of marking whatever is experienced. So that is sanya cetasika, arising with each citta. But it needs another cetasika to think about it. Without memory or remembrance, there is no condition for thinking of such and such.
Switzerland. You recognize that word, and probably you're thinking about things that are not in this room. And that's an example of a condition that conditions the chittas that think about the past, right? So Ajahn was just referring to memory being a reality that arises with each moment, such as with seeing, it rises and marks whatever is seen. So it marks and to remember later on. So it's because it's arisen with the chittas of the past that you remember your house in Switzerland, you can. So, and it depends on conditions, whether or not you'll think about it. Like I mentioned Switzerland, and you thought. So it's all up to conditions, whether you'll be thinking about past experiences. But for sure, each citta arises with the mental factor called memory or sanya that performs the function of marking the object.
And where does the memory, where does it get stored? Or what is the memory?
Like every other mental reality, attachment, aversion, it's from one consciousness to the next. It's passed on.
So you should remember the even past life then?
When there are conditions,
you should actually... So if there's a certain condition that happens,
right.
You might
if
say,
there are conditions.
Oh, this happened. Well, this happened before,
right.
In past life.
If there are conditions.
Yeah.
But it's not, doesn't just arise for anyone. There are specific conditions for that.
Can ignorance perform that function? See, so it must be very high panya, right understanding.
So actually there's memory, sanya, at each moment remembering an object, but impossible for everything to be remembered or thought about at this moment. So again, it depends on conditions, what thinking conditioned by memory thinks about. So whether one remembers where one puts one's key or forgets where one has put one's key, still there's memory at each moment. Even if one has memory issues in old age, still actually there is memory at each moment. It's just that sometimes it's not remembering what one would like it to remember. Nothing is ever lost. It just depends on conditions, what is thought about, conditioned by that memory.
Altogether, there are three kinds of the absolute realities. That which arises but cannot experience is rupa, and dhamma is any reality. Whatever is real is dhamma, no matter is whatever nama or rupa or whatever. So that when that arises and cannot experience is rupa dhamma, right? Because it's real. And citta, the faculty of experiencing, and cetasika, those absolute reality mental factor which arise with each citta. Some have only seven cetasikas arising with it, and some cittas more than that. So that's why it makes citta quite different. Did the previous moment die?
The previous moment died.
Yeah, so it's like this, no matter what we call birth or death, there are conditions for citta which has gone, conditioned the other instantly. So many conditions to condition a moment of real, of life. Can I change your name?
Of course you can.
See, but I cannot change the realities at all. This is the difference between the realities and the word or concept.
What the scientist takes for being reality are actually concepts, are just ideas. So by thinking about concepts or ideas again and again and again, it will never bring one closer to understanding reality.
The scientist has his or her particular definition of life, a different definition. Well, a word means what you define it to mean. So when the scientist says that plants live, he's using live in a particular way because they grow. What sort of birth does a plant have?
Just growing up, just...
That's not birth, is it?
Yes. I for me, I understand, but I mean, my friend...
Yeah, when I'm explaining that they're using
about
the
this.
Term live or life in a different... to have a different meaning.
Yes.
Nothing to do with what we call experiencing sentience. Yeah.
So what are there in a day? What are there in a day?
Moments.
Moments
of the moments that pass.
You can mention many things.
Yeah.
As before.
So give what just comes to your mind. What happens in
We've
a day.
Been talking about
In a day. I mean, yeah. What the day consists of is experiences
just today.
Different experiences. Yeah, you have seen something, you've heard.
What kind of feeling?
Feeling.
A moment ago and now.
It's already gone.
Different ones.
Yes.
Different kinds.
Is there always pleasant feeling, or what kind of feeling is it? Or sometimes unpleasant feeling, or sometimes neither pleasant or unpleasant feeling.
But throughout the day, there's always all kind of feelings, and I think that's some can be pleasant, some can be unpleasant, some can be so.
And of the category, the kinds of realities we were talking earlier, which kind of reality you think feeling is? We were talking about citta, cetasika, rupa. Remember, feeling is what kind of reality? It's real, right? You just acknowledge that feeling arises in a day,
yeah.
And it's real. And what kind of reality it is? Is it mental? Is it physical? Is it
mental, right. I think, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, it depends how you describe feeling. I mean, if it's a feeling as a conscious feeling or feeling as
pleasant, unpleasant.
But it can also be unpleasant if it's like a very bright light.
But unpleasant, it's a feeling. It's a mental reality, yeah. Right?
So
that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mental reality that's unpleasant. So if
so it's a reality, it's a mental reality.
Yeah.
So we can say that we think certain things, we think about certain kinds of food or sounds. Some of them arises a pleasant feeling, some unpleasant, right? So when there's thinking, there's feeling also. If you think about some nice music, you have pleasant feelings. So feeling arises together with the thinking. And they are different realities, right? So feeling is another reality that arises with consciousness. That can be known in a day.
Yeah.
So these are examples of chaitasikas, mental factors, ignorance, understanding, memory, feeling, attachment, dislike. These are all kinds of mental factors that arise with citta and fall away.
It's now.
It's gone.
Yeah, and then again it arises.
It arises and it
comes. So what is it?
Well, it doesn't exist.
What?
The now doesn't exist.
Yeah, for example.
Okay, for example, what is that it does not exist? What is that it?
She'd like some examples of different realities that are apparent now. Like now, it's a seeing, it's a hearing, it's a ignorance. Some examples of realities that are arising and falling away now.
There's a lot of realities that's falling away all constantly. Like I see blue, yellow, but there's never. It's gone all the time. So I just heard something, but it's disappeared. So the now is gone. I never reached the now.
So you just heard about seeing, but not know seeing yet, right?
Not knowing seeing it.
As it is yet, you just heard about seeing. It arises and falls away. It's conditioned. Without the eye, they cannot be seen. That's all you know about it. But not that which now sees. You don't know that reality yet. So there are many levels of understanding, intellectual understanding, conditioned direct understanding. Seeing cannot be other moment. And when it appears that it is, it cannot be taken for self or anything anymore.
So not I see, I hear, just moments of seeing and hearing arising and falling away. And when we have the idea of seeing yellow and blue, already it's thinking about what is seen so quickly.
So we could say that, I think what you're saying is that there are realities, but they're gone before they can be known as they are.
Yeah,
because it couldn't be gone and without being present previously, right? Yeah.
But you would agree that even while saying that this or that, there is gone or something, there is still, at that moment, a reality arising and falling away.
Yes.
Right. So if it's not the experience through the five senses and it's through the mind or it's thinking, right now there's seeing. So you could answer there's seeing because there is seeing, there's hearing, right? So that wouldn't be a wrong answer anyway.
Yeah.
So if your friend who is interested in science would like to hear about what Buddhism is and how it can help him with his interest in science, what will you say?
Get all about the other things. Otherwise, you cannot understand reality at all.
So just understand more of life at this moment, and whilst, and the science is like another subject. So if one tries to mix or combine, then one will never understand the truth of life taught by the Buddha.
Because life in science is not the Buddha's word, so I explain them to understand realities from the Buddha's teachings, and when they consider, they can understand more and more. So I think it's the only way to.
Like you would. You're more interested in understanding realities now. So, because you see the value of that, so whenever you share, you just talk about realities.
Yes, but I can explain in Thai, but in English, I can't, I'm sorry.
And so your friend, he can still work as a scientist or a psychologist or an economist, it doesn't matter, but with more understanding of reality, so no confusion at all then.
It's the most difficult thing to understand.
The most
difficult.
I think, I mean, what you try to do is understand life, and I think it's a difficult. I understand the concept that is taught, let's say like this, but then the question is my what does it help me to understand life in that sense, and if I understand life, what would I know more? So I would like to know basically what is the teaching, what should I learn from it?
Well, part of the thing that we spoke about earlier, the nature of ignorance. And along with the nature of ignorance, there is grasping. We want this, we want that. And we think this is a real thing. We think this is a glass with water, a phone, whatever. And we don't understand what really these are. Because most of the day we're thinking, a glass of water, pens, paper, and we're not thinking about the realities that make up the rupa, that makes up this glass of water. We're not thinking of the nature of the realities. We're not. This is why learning, understanding, or the Buddhist teaching is so important, to understand what this really is. Because if we really understand it, then we are not attached to it. So that's the main thing that causes dukkha in life, is that we are attached. So everything is unsatisfactory. That's the nature of dukkha. It's unsatisfactory. For instance, this thing, it can get lost, it can break, whatever. Okay? And we don't understand. Oh, I lost my phone. Oh. So we experience disappointment as a form of dukkha because it's unsatisfactory. Oh, I lost my phone. And we're not thinking in terms of what this thing really is. What are the realities? What are the nature of the realities of the rupa that make up this phone? And the nature is those three conditions that we've been talking about, and that is, it's impermanent. The realities that make up this thing, the rupa, they rise and fall away very rapidly. Less rapidly than citta, but rapidly just the same. And so that from moment to moment, the realities that make up this phone are different, even though it appears, in our ignorance, this thing appears to be a pretty permanent object. Okay, but it's not. It's constantly changing. That's one of the nature of life. Everything constantly changes from second to second, nanosecond to nanosecond. Everything's changing. Another thing is this thing is it is anatta. It has no personality, being, or whatever. It's easier to understand that about rupa, but it's not so easy to understand that about, say, what we consider a human being, because of the mental realities that make up what is a human being. And but when the more we can understand, so far, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, and anatta, the more we can detach from these things that creates the unsatisfactory in our lives. That's what the part of the teachings of the Buddha. The more we truly understand the nature of these things and the nature of the realities that are rising and falling away, the more we can detach. For instance, if you take in the idea of concepts, conceptual terms. Oh, let's see, I lost my passport. Okay? Oh, I'm so bereft, I lost my passport. What am I going to do? Oh, and your mind is in turmoil. And of course, you're not thinking, well, how am I going to, what am I going to, how do I deal with it? How do I become disattached from the loss of that passport, say, in conceptual things? Well, when there is the arising, when there's conditions for the arising of the thought, ah, okay, this passport is rupa, it rises and falls away, it is dukkha, it is anatta, it is, etc., it's impermanent. With the mind can better think how to deal with the situation of doing something about the lost passport. This is not a reality. It's made up. There are realities here, but the thing, the concept of the having shape and form of this thing is not...
Thinking about the passport of being made up of rupas, and this is all a long story. It's not the understanding of...
Right, but right now...
Hardness
sort of
now, or what is appearing now, because there is no passport that's made up of rupas. It's just hardness that's touched now, thinking about passport. So, and the purpose
right,
is not
of course,
to
that's why I said it was
be,
in conceptual
not
terms.
Not to try to be calm, but just to understand what appears at this
that's
very
right.
moment.
Yeah.
So no matter anger, kindness, calmness, whatever appears is just real. It's not self at all.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It's all about understanding at this very moment. Otherwise, people have the idea that they should think that, well, this is made up of rupas, or you know.
Oh, but how else can I explain it at this, you know, at this point, right? But there is realities here, and there is realities here, and there's realities here, and understanding the nature of those realities.
But thinking that, oh, there are realities here, there are realities here, is not the understanding of hardness that appears now, or visible object that's seen at this moment.
Okay, right. I
or sound that
yeah,
is heard
because I
now.
Didn't go into
it's,
explaining that.
It's like thinking, oh, there are realities here and here. It's just a long story about realities, but it has to come back to understanding right now.
Absolutely.
What is
understanding the nature of
right now.
The actual
no
reality.
Matter,
we
no
talk
matter
about
what
seeing
is.
Now and hearing now,
because yes,
they are realities
mm-hmm.
that are appearing.
Well, yes, of course, but I'm explaining to him in the terms of that. But that absolutely is true, that understanding the nature of whatever that reality is appearing.
John's question was earlier was, what is the hardest thing in life? So, to understand. So, what is the hardest thing to understand in life? Not the theory of science, not the theory of economic, but what is hardest to understand is life at this very moment, to directly know what appears right now. Because it's not an academic study or an intellectual study about all the different rupas that rise and fall away. It's the understanding of what appears at this very moment. Not something that can be learnt in school or memorized from a text at all.
I mean, it is what we take for a phone or a cup. I mean, it's not just rupas. There must be thinking.
right? And usually it's thinking with ignorance and attachment. So it's not any particular, you can't pinpoint to one reality. There's so many realities that need to be understood. So it's just what appears that can be understood, one at a time.
What is the hardest thing to understand? I wouldn't pinpoint it at the hardest thing to understand, but I would say just to understand is, I think, what is, it's the what's happening now. I mean, when you describe the situation that you're unhappy or because of, if you understand why you have all these feelings, I think that that's difficult to understand, to learn, to take apart. But it is I think one can work on it to understand that, to understand the very moment. Let's say, but yeah, so there's no like particular hardest thing to understand.
Just picking up your answer, can we say there's a difference between understanding what is at the present moment and understanding why it is?
Cool.
Just what is versus
first you have to understand what it is, and then you can answer your why it is.
Possibly.
Or maybe you have to ask yourself, it's why it is, and then you...
The only thing that can be directly understood is what is.
Yeah.
The why is more likely to be thinking about past events, right? So we would, in terms of understanding, it's only the present reality that can be directly understood as it is.
It's very hard to understand that which is seen as it is?
I don't think so, no.
A few times that it's all gone.
Yeah. But it's hard to understand. Yeah.
So
very.
Is it easy to understand since it's gone?
Okay. So you in that sense,
if you look at that way, you can actually not understand it because it's gone, unless you have your memory that thinks about it and then try to, well, you have to use your memory of what you just saw. Is that possible to say?
So just think about the nature of that which is seen. That which is seen is real or not real? Now, there is seeing. So there must be the object which is seen. The object sees that. So what is the object which is seen as it is? What do you see? What is seen in reality? Is it not the most difficult thing to understand? Yes.
And I just put that another way. We've said that memory is necessary to know, to identify, or to recognize what is seen. Is there a moment of just experiencing the visible before there is any recognition of what it is?
Yeah, there must be, because according to your explanation, there's always one thing, one reality happen after the other.
So the question is about the nature of that moment of just bare experiencing, because the use of memory, which is automatic, must be the mind door rather than the seeing consciousness, right? Seeing consciousness can't remember what's been seen before. It's just experiencing what is appearing to it at the present moment. So that's the question that Ajahn is putting to you, that the most difficult thing to know is the nature of the object of just that moment of seeing consciousness before there's any recognition of what it is as a cup or a person or someone that I know.
Yeah.
before you said, oh, seeing yellow and blue, but it's already recognizing and thinking about yellow and blue color. So it's already thinking about what was seen. So before there was thinking about yellow and blue, actually there must have been the visible object that was seen. Otherwise there couldn't be any thinking about yellow and blue. So just that which is seen is different from what is thought about as yellow and blue.
Can you see white and blue at the same time?
White and blue at the same time. Probably the experience can probably do it, you know, like the eye or whatever that can probably perceive white and blue reflection, but then again you can't process it.
Not at the same time, otherwise you cannot tell what is white and what is blue.
Right? Yeah. That's the biggest.
So how many colors in this room? Many moments of seeing and other consciousness arising before and after, before thinking about it. And this is very difficult to experience it, but there must be the understanding clearly to be conditioned for understand moment of seeing. Without the intellectual understanding as conditions, it's impossible to really understand what it's seen as it is. Because no self, no body in that which is seen at all. No cup, no thing in it. So what is seen? Is a reality which can impinge on the eye base, that's all. No body, nothing at all. When there is no understanding of this, is it ignorance?
Why should there be ignorance?
No understanding of the truth of that which is seen, yeah, is ignorance.
Okay.
Yeah. Is ignorance a reality? Is it real? Whenever it arises, it cannot understand. Never understand at all.
Some people suggest that ignorance is just a matter of absence of understanding. Does that make sense to you? Or does it? Do you think that ignorance is actually one kind of reality that arises and performs a particular function?
No.
Different from understanding?
I don't think so.
And understanding is a reality that arises and performs a function?
No, that's a process of thinking.
Yeah, but it's not a reality, like feeling, like memory, like attachment.
My question is more like, what do you define a reality? What is a reality?
Seeing,
yes.
Now, that is what I refer to as reality, as against cup, which is an idea. It's just a result of thinking based on different experiences through the senses. So that's the difference. Seeing is a reality, visible object is a reality, hearing is a reality, sound is a reality. It has its own characteristics. It's not the result of thinking, because it arises now and falls away. It doesn't require thinking to for the experience of seeing, for hearing. And thinking itself is a reality.
Then how about the feeling? Is that the reality?
Also. Is it not real to you? Pleasant and unpleasant feeling? Is that something that is made up?
But the question is, does that require thinking or does it just happen?
If I poke a pin.
Yeah. Oh, you mean, okay. Feeling by the senses then again. But then we are.
But that's real. Okay,
yeah.
You agree that that particular feeling is real. Unpleasant feeling to the body. What about anger? and this unpleasant feeling. Isn't that real? Do you have to think about it, or is it that at that time it just arises and is to be known?
How do you know that maybe your brain told you that you should feel angry? So it was a process of
regardless
something.
Of what goes on and what's the but at that moment of experiencing it, the anger is real.
Yes.
Right? So that's a reality.
Like hardness now, when it's touched, it's real. But cup can only be thought about. So unpleasant feeling, it's real. But someone said something bad to me. That's just an idea, a story. It's not real. The thinking is real, but the idea is just an idea. So we're talking about the realities of life, because the realities have characteristics, can be known, as opposed to the idea someone said something bad, or table or cup, which can only ever be thought about.
So what is there now? Yes.
Well, seeing and hearing,
okay.
And
seeing is a reality, absolute yes. Reality. What type, what kind is it? There are two kinds of realities. That which arises but cannot experience. Another one is that which arises and it has to experience. Whenever it arises, it experiences. No one at all. So what is seeing? What kind of reality?
That's the one that you it happens, so you cannot...
It experiences, right? Seeing, experience what is there. It sees.
Yeah.
So it's citta, the faculty of experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
It does not do anything else, just arise and experience. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. And the other reality, which is real, are not citta, but they are cetasikas, mental factor, arising together with citta. So, what kind of feeling is now? Very difficult to understand, see?
No, it doesn't matter. We're not trying to pinpoint and want an exact answer.
I have to know that it's very difficult to really say what is it. Yeah, because it's gone instantly. But there are moments of feeling, different kinds of feeling all the time. So just talk about one. One kind of feeling now?
I mean, feeling now?
Yes.
But the question is, does this feeling with the senses kind of feeling that we say, or feeling by them?
Can we say there are five kinds of feeling? The mental pleasant feeling and the mental unpleasant feeling. And the bodily pleasant feeling and unpleasant feeling and the neutral one, indifferent feeling.
Yeah.
So what kind of feeling is now? There must be feeling all the time because citta arises all the time, succeeding one to another all the time. So the feeling arises with citta. Whenever there is experiencing, there must be feeling of that object, any kind of feeling. Any of the five, one of the five. So now, at moment of seeing, is there any feeling? Just the moment, one moment of feeling, of seeing, is there feeling?
No.
Yes. Yes. Feeling arises with citta. Each moment as condition for citta to arise too. So, feeling is cetasika, the mental factor. And when we talk about any citta, in order to really understand little by little, more and more, that it's not I, it's conditioned, it arises and falls away until it appears to the high degree of understanding. But it has to begin from now to really understand whether There is seeing when there are conditions for seeing to arise, and seeing does not arise alone. It has cetasika as conditions for its arising, and there are at least 7 kind of cetasikas arising with one moment of citta. For example, seeing, there are only 7 cetasikas. One is feeling. What kind of feeling is there at this moment of seeing? Very difficult to know, but it is indifferent feeling, not pleasant, not unpleasant. So in a day, what kind of feeling arises more than the others in a day?
What kind of feeling? Probably a neutral feeling. Most of the day, you probably feel neutral.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, because usually it's not known, so that's why when Ajahn asked you if there's feeling at the moment of seeing, you said no, because there's no understanding of the neutral feeling at that moment. But when you're stiff from sitting a long time, at the moment of body consciousness, unpleasant feeling more apparent. Or when everything is very sabai-sabai and there's pleasant feeling, it's more obvious. And at a moment of feeling angry, what kind of feeling is that? Pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, or neutral feeling?
I think that depends on the human being. Whether that's it is an unpleasant feeling. No,
unpleasant.
Is it unpleasant? That's a question. I actually don't know if it's an unpleasant feeling
at the
if you're angry.
When you're very irritating, or when there's confusion, when you're not sure of what the right answer is.
Rather an unpleasant feeling.
Unpleasant feeling. Yeah. Different from when you're very happy, or you're eating something tasty, or drinking your coffee. Pleasant feeling. Yeah. So different at each moment, different feelings rising, falling away. Again, this is more basic this afternoon. Everything clear?
Yeah. About the rupa, we're talking about that rupas also arises and fall away in per second, right? So what condition make them seeing like they are like very permanent?
The question is what
condition makes them rupas seem permanent? And I think the answer is
perversion of perception, ignorance, not understanding.
Not seeing them as they are.
Yeah. This is the characteristic of ignorance, not seeing it as it is, and when it is the idea that actually they last and are permanent, there can be wrong view at that moment. So wrong view is another cetasika, another mental factor, when there is not just calling you Daniel my friend, but when there really is the idea that there really is an I or a person or a friend in reality, or that anything lasts, then there can be wrong view at that time too.
But we have to be a bit careful here, because we've heard that because realities arise and fall away so rapidly, there is an image of continuity, and it doesn't mean that. So what we're saying doesn't mean that the enlightened being sees everything as rising and falling away. Because for the enlightened being, there is still the idea of a table and a person, but there's no wrong view about the nature of reality.
He doesn't see the cup as permanent. So there's no idea that this is permanent. That was the question, why it seems like it's permanent.
Well, I think he means, when permanent, he means just lasting, not... If they're momentary, why do they seem to be lasting, right? Continuous, yeah.
It is ignorance, because we don't know, but I think we haven't mentioned that these realities arise and fall away so fast, you know, like in 1 second, just trillions of jitters arising and falling. So when we first hear... It's impossible. As Ajahn says, it's the hardest thing to see, you know, the moment of seeing or a moment of hearing or even visible object, because gone already. But eventually wisdom, you know, if we listen enough, eventually wisdom slowly develops, and there is eventually understanding, but a long time.
And if there is trying to understand the impermanence of rupas, or trying to know that this book is made up of rupas, then what kind of reality is there when at that moment of trying to understand?
Yeah, again, back to the attachment or the ignorance, trying
and
to...
And clinging to the idea of self, yeah, wrong view, yeah, wrong practice, yeah. So it's not a matter of doing anything or trying to understand or trying to catch realities, because that would be like following a ritual, following a practice. So it's about understanding very naturally, no matter how one's life is.
How many new words do you have today? Okay, what are they?
Rupa.
Yes.
Chitta.
Mm-hmm.
Chaitasika.
Yes.
And was it Chitta? What are they?
The Chitta, Chaitasika, and Rupa.
Yeah.
Right.
Rupa. And
so, what are you?
Hmm?
What are you?
Me.
Yeah.
Rupa.
And?
Hmm?
And not only Rupa, what else?
If it's just Rupa, it's like the plant.
Part of it with the Chaitasika.
Chitta, yeah. And Chaitasika and Rupa.
Yeah.
The fourth word is, yeah. Nama, I think.
Ay, Nama, yeah.
Yes. That's all. Nama and Rupa.
And what are Nama? What realities are Nama?
Nama. And yeah, that happens together with the Dita and the Chaitasika. Yeah.
Yes, from one word, Dhamma, there are two words, Rupa Dhamma and Nama Dhamma, and then three words, Chitta, Chaitasika, and Rupa, and four words, Chitta, Chaitasika, Rupa, and Nibbana. Nibbana. Nibbana is not Chitta, not Chaitasika, not Rupa. Each has its own characteristic.
Nibbana is the one unconditioned reality. So each Chitta, each Chaitasika, each Rupa is conditioned. Nibbana is the unconditioned reality, only experienced by those who are enlightened.
So what can experience Nibbana? By way of Dhamma, Paramatta Dhamma, the absolute truth, what can experience Nibbana?
It has to be one of the things you've mentioned already. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be Rupa.
But the Rupa wouldn't experience it, but he also doesn't know. And it,
mm-hmm.
If you just want, it's a Chaitasika.
Chitta and Chaitasika.
That could understand that, yeah.
With Anya as Chaitasika. Right understanding.
Three words for today.